Hello, everybody. My name is Jim Vacca, and I am here to present with a number of folks from Microsoft a best of build session. Welcome. To our session today. It'll be a 1 hour session that we'll go through. Let me go ahead and advance the slide. Give us a moment, a little bit of delay on the technology. So again, my name is Jim Vacca. I am a solution specialist with Microsoft. I work out of the Northeast District covering Microsoft's developer tools and cloud development technologies. I will be one of the participants in today's session, and doing most of the heavy lifting on our session today will be my colleague Chris Bowen, a technology specialist within our group. And then we are pleased to have Bart Mathis, who will be manning the Q&A panel. So please feel free to ask really all the difficult questions on the Q&A panel, and we'll leave the rest of the easy stuff for Chris and I to guide you through. So moving on to the next slide, I'll give a moment again just for the slides to update. You'll see today's agenda. We're going to go through just a quick overview of what is build. There was actually more replies from our invite process of people asking some background information on the Build conference. So we thought we'd just hit some highlights on that one. And then really getting into some specific detail around the Visual Studio family, some detail around our many updates in the DevOps category, and then what is quickly becoming my favorite feature out of the Build conference this year, and that is the Azure Snapshot debugging. And then, because there are so many topics that we really wanted to add in but just found it difficult to put enough content together for just the hour, we built a rapid-fire topic section where we will at least list out many additional topics that we wish we could have got to and speak at a high level on as many as we can get through in the amount of time that we do have at the end. And then we will certainly end up with some resources at the end that you can use to find more details. Again, there's many sessions that go into a lot of the great content. So that's the agenda we have for you today. I'm going to go ahead and advance to the first section, which we're calling Build 2017, The Essentials. Okay, so what is Build? So Build is an annual conference that Microsoft holds focused on software engineers and web developers. For any of you who have been following Microsoft for some time, you may recall the prior event that was similar in context called the Professional Developers Conference. This conference more or less has replaced that. And one of the things that is unique about it is it's delivered in a multitude of formats, mainly with keynotes that are staffed by Microsoft executives and product owners, so the people really at the top of the company making the decisions and steering us in the right direction. And it's their opportunity to really share insight into, you know, what's available today, but also what the future software solutions are and what they are seeing as trends. And then followed up from that, there's a lot of breakout sessions, many of which are then recorded and made available to you in various formats like Channel 9 and YouTube, and we've got great links for all of those following up. That go into a lot of the detail so that you can see more depth of the topics. The event has been held in many different places, but this particular one was in Seattle, and it ran on the 10th through the 12th of this month. So just to hit a couple of the highlights, so a sampling of some of the key numbers that kind of came out. There were some great stats from Windows 10 where it hit 500 million monthly active users. And this was a substantial growth from the September timeframe when we had 400 million downloads. And what that is really doing is that's showing us that we're somewhere in about halfway mark for the goal that Microsoft has of having 1 billion Windows 10-based devices by the year 2008. So that's a pretty impressive stat to have out there. Cortana, the Cortana device, 145 million users using that now, and we boast a number of new skills. And for those of you maybe not as familiar with it just yet, skills are really commands that you have available to you to sort of both interface from a developer point of view, but also from, you know, a human interface, such as, you know, I want you to do this task, or I want you to, you know, turn on the lights, et cetera, et cetera. The bot framework, and the bot framework is something that is really probably one of the most compelling and sought after technologies that we see. It's being used by over 130 developers, as we show on the slide, and that's up from 45,000 just back in our Connect conference back in the fall. And Chris, you and I have seen, you know, a number of customer engagements and projects ourselves on bot framework. It's really something that, you know, we see customers really engaging on their own.
Yeah, it's definitely a growing area, seeing a lot more interest.
And there's certainly no shortage of follow-up sessions on bot framework throughout Build this year. And then the last one, cognitive services. This is really a very fast and growing area. In fact, segueing right in from the bot framework, customer request that we get is typically, how do we then tap into one of the many different cognitive services that exist out there? So we're up to 29 of them. These really make it easy to tap into a lot of the artificial intelligence that exists out there with, you know, very little code. And four of the newest services that we have are and what's new about these four that I'm going to mention is the ability for you to custom drive them. So things around Bing search, our vision, and the vision one is something neat where you actually have the ability to have the vision cognitive service detect things that you want to see, whether it be people, objects, items inside, the vision, the decision tree, and also video, where you're actually able to sort of index and look at the different parts of the video, whether it be sound, the audio pieces, as well as items inside the video. So a lot of really interesting top-level key announcements that coming out from the top-level Build. So let me go ahead and hit the advance. And the next section, what we'll do is we'll get into the Visual Studio family area. Let me go ahead and just give it a second there for the slide to advance. Bear with me here. I'm going to actually just build out all of the items on this slide. Very good. Okay, great. So Visual Studio momentum, really kind of excited about this. Visual Studio 2017 is the fastest adopted version of Visual Studio in Visual Studio history. In fact, 48 hours after the launch, there were over 500,000 installs of the product, which was, I think they said, about a 40% increase from the last launch, in a three times greater increase in growth rate. So lots of great excitement on the release of that product. Chris, what would you say was probably one of the most popular features customers have reached out to you on as far as Visual Studio 2017?
Well, I think a lot of it is on the shift left, being able to do more as a developer and learn from what would normally be maybe an overnight process, and then you find out you broke the build, you found out you checked in code that didn't have good unit tests, all that kind of stuff. We can really get to a developer as they're writing the code that we want to improve. And so I think that's one of the key things that I've seen customers reach out to and have discussions around.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we certainly spend a lot of our time talking to customers about that. On the Xamarin side, over 1 million downloads of Xamarin. That's, again, three times the rate of utilization of that technology before we acquired them back in the spring. And another one that's probably, very of interest to many of the people on the call, and that's over 1,200 extensions to the product. And that's where, you know, other companies add capabilities to the solution and really allow Visual Studio to extend its capabilities. And then just the last thing to sort of comment on, the Stack Overflow survey results, a couple key items, C# popularity is on the rise. So that's kind of interesting. We certainly see a lot of interest from customers around JavaScript and server-side JavaScript with Node, but it's certainly good to see that C# is still there and probably more so with the .NET Core piece. And then over on the JavaScript side, we see TypeScript, the fastest growing language on Stack Overflow. And I know that there was a couple of sessions specifically on TypeScript at Build. So if you wanted to see more of the details around that. All right, great. Let me go ahead and advance the slide. So the next thing that we're going to just talk about is, you know, really just kind of announcing the product and really kind of the roadmap for what we've done with that. Chris, do you want me to advance to the next slide?
No, I'll take it from here. Okay. So what we're talking about here is the fact that we have both the current, basically deployed production version of Visual Studio available for you called 15.2. So that was just released as of the Build conference. A lot of good stuff in there. And in a moment, I'll talk about what's new in the preview version as well and how that differentiates from kind of the mainline version that you'd have for your production day-to-day use. So in 15.2, the one you can get today, go and run the Visual Studio installer and hit update, hit modify, and you're good to go. It'll take care of things for you. That's going to give you access to the latest features that we have around Python development, being able to do all of those, the work in the Python stack, the full stack of Python development right in Visual Studio 2017. And that ties in very well with other things like other workflows that you can add in. Again, just use the installer and you'll see them there. So things like data science and analytical applications, being able to pull those in, work in R and do data process analytics, things like that, that complement maybe the other things that you're doing in Visual Studio, along with things like support for Unity. So Unity being able to be to help you drive to applications that are good for simulation, game development, et cetera, all within Visual Studio. And there's a bunch of other things too. We're cutting out kind of a lot of little details here, but side-by-side TypeScript, Jim mentioned that's on the rise. We support that extremely well in Visual Studio for you. So side-by-side support for different versions of TypeScript, improvements on Linux C++, F-sharp tooling, a whole bunch of stuff is in there, but we only have so much time with you today, so we'll give you the highlights here. So let's move on. We'll talk about what's in the preview as well. So as we talked about before, just mentioning in passing almost, that we have the version of Visual Studio that you install. And that's kind of represented here by the blue bands that you're seeing on this slide. And that's telling you what you have access to now. You have access to, as well, the preview of where we're going. And that includes a lot of additional features that you're seeing there. And you can kind of see the whole list run through some great support for, we'll talk about what's new in .NET with .NET Core in just a moment. You're seeing a whole bunch of things around our work for container support, which is Visual Studio is only one facet of our overall investment around containers, which goes from Azure to DevOps to Visual Studio and all parts in between. We are significantly investing in providing you the best tooling support, that kind of an architecture. And so let me just advance for one second here and show you a little bit of how to get the previews. If you go to visualstudio.com, and just, you'll find it very readily. The preview is available of 2017. And I just wanted to mention that these are available side by side. So you can go and grab this. We do support side by side of the production version, the 15.2, and then the preview version, things that we're talking about here. But you know, the main one is for your day-to-day production support scenarios. The preview is gonna give you a glimpse and get, you know, some feedback and some readiness around where we're going with the product. So it's a good chance to use that. When you do launch the installer, it's going to bring up the standard, you know, the much, you know, a lot of good innovation went into this new installer in 2017. So you'll see that here. On my machine, I actually have side-by-side of both Enterprise 15.2 and then Preview 15.3. So you'll see that there side-by-side, no problem. So I can work with one or the other and kind of look at where the features are. So in 15.3, I would encourage you to check that out as well. So you'll see other things beyond, you know, .NET Core and containers, being able to work with 365 services and Graph, a bunch of things like that, but also additional enhancements to existing things in 2017, like live unit testing, for example, has support for .NET Core. So I mentioned that really in brief before we talked about shift left. That's one of those shift left features in Visual Studio 2017 that you'll absolutely want to take a look at and take advantage of, getting even better as we look toward the preview of what's coming in Visual Studio. All right, so we'll advance here. I'll go ahead and move the slide. All right,
great. Okay, so yeah, we'll get into a few more of the Visual Studio features. This next one, Visual Studio for Mac, general availability. Chris, this is one that I think I was surprised by the number of customers that were actually interested in this. I guess I just don't think of Mac as necessarily a predominant development workstation, but we probably got more than our fair share of customer requests of people actually working with the preview, putting it through its paces, and really kind of interested in sort of round tripping. Part of the team works on a Windows desktop, part of the team works on the Mac side of it. What's kind of your viewpoint as far as, you know, where Visual Studio on the Mac kind of fits in the intended audience for that?
Yeah, that's a great point. You and I have had these conversations directly with folks on this webcast. You know who you are, that we've had discussions with. So it's great to have that as an option. As you mentioned, really the point here is to bring what people know about the power of Visual Studio to a new environment of, well, a new to Visual Studio environment of the Mac. And as you kind of alluded to, is that we can work side by side. So we can actually have the ability to have people work on the Mac version and
right.
the Windows version. And there's no translation. There's no, you know, modification to your CS proj files and solution files. It's all the same. So everyone can be productive on the environment that they're on, that they spend most of their time on, and contribute to the overall project. So that's really at the core of why we're bringing this over to the Mac world, is to encourage more of the team, more of the design contributors, other developers to be part of that process from wherever they are. So let me dive into a little more detail on this, and I've got a couple of screenshots just to show you what the experience is. So the first one is just kind of a welcome to the Visual Studio for the Mac experience, and that it is actually, you know, honest to goodness, the Visual Studio IDE that you've learned to love and grow to, you know, appreciate on Windows. So a lot of those same things are represented here with templates and getting started, the start page, all that kind of stuff, news feeds and everything. But as you see, I'll move forward a couple of additional ones here. We also support other scenarios. So while we support things like what you'd expect around mobile development with Xamarin, with C#, being able to do you know, cross-platform mobile applications with Xamarin, we've also been working hard to integrate features around other scenarios, like working with Azure and hybrid scenarios, working with, you know, .NET Core, F#, ASP.NET. All those things are part of this. And one of them that you're seeing right here is Unity. So I mentioned this on the Visual Studio 2017 side. It's true here as well. Grab, you know, go start using Unity. You can use that for simulation purposes, for 3D, 2D development, game development, all on your Mac within Visual Studio for the Mac experience. And then also, if I clicked, yep, also just the stuff that you expect from Visual Studio, you're right there. It is Visual Studio. You've got all the support in the editor, you know, for you know, advice and tips and productivity that we certainly appreciate on the Windows side. So that's a quick review of where we are there. There's some preview things that are coming as well. So even more in the future around Azure Functions support, more IoT support, Docker being able to deploy and debug .NET Core out to containers, all from within Visual Studio for the Mac. So stay tuned. It's an exciting time. We got a lot of stuff coming for you on the Mac as well.
Yeah, that's great. I think some people thought that initially it was really just going to be mobile development, because really that product started from our acquisition of the Xamarin side. But really what we've seen is it really mature into just another platform that, you know, application developers want to have available to them when they're using Visual Studio. So that's great.
Absolutely. All right, so we'll move on to the next section here. All right, so we're going to talk about Visual Studio's support for Azure Functions and Azure Logic Apps as well, two key components. I know Jim and I, we've had conversations around how you know, the options for taking existing on-prem architectures and moving them to be cloud-ready, to be cloud-native application development, hybrid scenarios. I think these two are two really great choices for helping to move more of what you have in your application space into the cloud. So we have two things, Azure Functions, really more focused on serverless development, which kind of an odd phrase, but really it means there's still a server there, but you're not having to deal with it as much as you would with other choices. You can basically say, here's some code. I want this to be run as, you know, as a response to this event or on demand as an API, and I want you, Microsoft, to take care of scaling this. Don't give me all the wheels and the knobs and pulleys to scale it myself. If I call it a lot, scale it a lot. If I don't, scale it back down, and I'm only going to pay for how much I'm using. That's the essence of functions. So we're bringing that experience right into Visual Studio. I'll talk about that in a moment. Logic apps, you can think of that very succinctly as workflow in the cloud. So if you have these complex scenarios that you're trying to write code around, I've done this myself, a whole bunch of nested if-else statements and switches and stuff that are kind of replicating another process that you're modeling in code, this is, in many cases, a better choice for you because now you can have a visual designer, you can have integration with other services, with even with Azure Functions and other APIs that you have, and all of the SaaS providers that we work with as well, to bring this all together. And so while you can do all of this in the Azure portal today, we're also now bringing more of the tooling for you to be right there and ready for you in Visual Studio.
So one of the things that I've noticed when we've had app modernization conversations with customers is really the role of these two in particular, Azure Functions and Logic Apps, and maybe even Logic Apps a little bit more. It seems like a very natural way for an application that's being looked at for modernization for it to say, hey, let's move the workflow of the app out into Logic Apps, and then the substance or the what we do as a result of the different workflow can kind of still be the underpinnings of our base code, but we sort of replace that other piece. So it seems to be a very common first step as part of one of those app modernization strategies.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've seen this a number of times where folks don't tend to move all their stuff at once to the cloud, so they want to support hybrid scenarios. They want to take the pieces that matter the most. That can take advantage of scale and all the features of Azure and move those up, but maybe not all at once. And this is a key part of how to do that. So let's talk about the features themselves for each of these tool sets. So I'll talk about the Azure Functions tooling first, and it really is what you'd expect from Visual Studio. It's the start to finish kind of experience. This is a preview release of our tooling for functions in Visual Studio 2017. So you can go and grab this today, bring it into Visual Studio, and then take advantage of some of the things that I'll show you very briefly here. But yep, file new, go ahead and create a new function right in Visual Studio. We'll walk you through that. We have the templates to support you. You can then go ahead and say, yep, this is how I want it to run. So based on certain triggering conditions or various configurations that you may have. So all that's built in for you. And you can also do some interesting things like, well, obviously you can write the code, but obviously taking full advantage of the Visual Studio environment, but you're also seeing some more advanced things in this code, for example, using web jobs attributes to actually say, this is what this code is doing, and I don't need to use any other separate file to annotate that and to give meaning to this particular method. I can do it right there with web jobs attributes. That's actually brand new. To this tooling. So check that out and then take full advantage of the fact that, hey, it's Visual Studio. So you can go ahead and actually work with your functions before everything is packaged up and deployed, which of course is the last part here. Publish it just like you're used to in Visual Studio. We've added a bunch of options that are contextual based on what you have in your solution. So in this example, publishing it out to an Azure Function app, yep, it just works. It'll point to your subscription. We can download all the stuff that we need to know about your subscription and wire that up for you. You're good to go, and you're published and up in the portal, up in Azure. On the other side, we have the tooling for Logic Apps. So give a similar tour of that as well in a couple of more parts, though. Same idea. Hey, I'm in Visual Studio. Want to create a new Logic App, and with the tools in Visual Studio, I can now either start from a brand new Logic App, and you can see here just saying, that's what I want. Let's create a resource for that, add it to a resource group, and start working with it in Visual Studio. Or, and very interestingly, can you advance the slide for me? We're also able to use the Cloud Explorer in Visual Studio for being able to access an existing Logic App. And you see that right there. I can go to one, right-click, and say open with Logic App Editor and work with that as an existing app right there in the Visual Studio environment. Then you'll have access to the design experience that you'd probably expect right there in Visual Studio, really mirroring what you can do in the portal, but with all the goodness of Visual Studio around it, so being able to take the different tasks and the different steps and the trees that you're pulling together to make a Logic App right there in Visual Studio. And when you're ready, you can go ahead and take this, like I talked about in the function side, go ahead and right-click and deploy, and we'll take care of all that for you, packaging it up, like I said before, and downloading everything you need to know about your subscription. You just say, here's where I want to go, and off it goes. You're good. You're now in whatever environment you deploy to, whether that's test or production. You've now used all Visual Studio tools to help you out with that.
Yeah, that's great. And just a reminder for folks, the slides are available for you to download in case some of these screenshots that we're showing there are a little bit small on your desktop, on your monitor. Feel free to download the slides and you know, maybe see them in a little bit better format. We'll post in the Q&A window details on how to download if you don't already have access to that. Okay, great. Let me go ahead and advance to the next slide. So .NET Core, the 2.0 preview. So Chris, certainly a lot of popularity with customers that we talk to around .NET Core. Great to see that, you know, we've really straightened out how people access it. There's a base core level you'll go through and you'll explain some of the different pieces that allows there to be a standard contract for all the follow-on levels to be able to access. What do you see really as the key advantage or role of .NET Core for customers, you know, who maybe have already invested in .NET? You know, why would they be interested in maybe exploring .NET Core, or is it not really for them? Is it really for a different audience?
That's a great question. We've been coming out with kind of different facets of .NET in the past several years. Obviously, .NET Framework we've had for, 15 years now, I think. It's a very mature platform with the full spectrum of everything that .NET's grown to be able to do over those years. .NET Core, and also in parallel, the Xamarin options as well around cross-platform mobile development are different views into that world of .NET. So .NET Core, very specifically, is been made from the ground up to be suited for service-based applications, for cloud-deployed environments. If you hear microservices, you might start thinking about .NET Core and kind of the ability to put that code into a container that we mentioned before and have, you know, immediate scalability and manageability around that environment, pulling in only the parts of .NET that matter to that particular service or that server application. And that's really at the essence of .NET Core. The interesting thing here, too, is that because it's a subset of the full .NET framework, we've worked to make sure that I say we as if I took credit for doing this. We at Microsoft have taken that subset and ensured that it runs in a cross-platform way as well. So not only Windows, which you, of course, would expect, but also to Linux distributions and to Mac as well. So being able to take your code unchanged and deploy it as your needs may change, as your environments may shift amongst those environments without having to re-architect and rewrite .NET code or just, you know, any code to take advantage of that new environment. So to that end, we've been continuing to invest in .NET Core along with all of the other environments. .NET Framework gets another update as well, as does, of course, Xamarin. All along the while, but here it was just interesting to point out because for a few things, .NET Core 2.0 increases the space of the SDKs that you can get at. So there's even more things that you can do within .NET Core as of .NET Core 2.0. So there's a bunch of new SDKs that are made available, and this comes from the .NET Standard 2.0 support. .NET Standard is kind of a newer idea in the .NET family. It really is, I've heard it referred to as the one framework to rule them all, kind of the way of saying this is consistency across those different facets of .NET, whether it is core or framework, but saying that our innovation is going to land here first. It's going to land in .NET Standard first, and then we're going to help define what .NET means, and you'll see that implemented in all those different facets, so you have continuity, you have consistency. You know that, hey, if it's in .NET Standard, I'm good. I can work with that. I can have components that work well together, and that's our model going forward. So stay tuned for even more on what we're doing in .NET Standard, but along with that, .NET Core gets, you know, the rising tide raises all ships here, so even more things are now into .NET Core, so you can use even more of what you know of .NET in that cross-platform mechanism. So within all of that, there's just a bunch of things around new APIs you can get at, serialization, networking, I/O, XML, whole bunch of stuff that's in .NET Core. And I don't think I have a slide to show you this, but this is also stuff that's accessible now in the tooling in Visual Studio 2017. So you'll actually have tool support ready for you to write .NET Core applications in Visual Studio 2017. So definitely, if you're looking at .NET Core, make sure you're up on the latest version of Visual Studio because we have the tooling there to support you. Now, a partner to that is ASP.NET Core, and that's really what it sounds like. It's the web sibling, or kind of the thing that builds on the goodness of .NET Core, but in the context of the web. And so all of the kind of things that you expect from the world of ASP.NET really inspires what we're doing here in ASP Core. So you're seeing in the 2.0 preview time frame that we have support for things like Razor pages, for improvements on performance, startup times, all kinds of stuff. There's a bunch of new things in there that, like many of the things that Jim and I are reviewing, we can really only give you a heads up that things are happening, and we'll refer you to where to go to find deeper sessions. Most of the things that we're reviewing with you probably have a deeper session behind them. So let's move ahead here. We'll go on, have just a quick view of how to get this for you. Just go out to the .NET site, dot.net, and you can download what you need. We have nice walkthroughs for all the different environments, so Windows, Linux, Mac, Docker container support. So good videos to help you out with all of that as well. So I hope you'll check that out. That is certainly a lot of interesting stuff on the .NET side.
Great, and it's really kind of exciting to see the progress because from the Connect conference back in the fall and November timeframe, the announcements they made there, and then just to fast forward just a few months and really see the progress, you know, right in front of our eyes. So it's pretty exciting. Okay, so that was a great update on that section. Let's move to the next area, which is probably just as rich and as deep, and that's around DevOps, the category of DevOps, which Microsoft provides capabilities for through both client-side tooling and I guess what you would consider server-side tooling in both the Team Foundation Server product for on-prem capability and then our cloud version of that, which is called Visual Studio Team Services. So a great hybrid solution there. Let me go ahead and advance the next slide. And great, there's no builds here. So I know you're going to go into some detail in a couple of the areas, but let me just take a quick moment just to kind of highlight at this higher level some of the different items. So under when we put this slide together, we tried to represent the typical DevOps paradigm of designing or planning, develop and test, build, deploy, and then collect feedback, sort of in that kind of concept. So in the first bucket there for plan, delivery plans, actually one of the favorite features that I have inside of this release, largely because many of the customers that we interact with, I do a lot of the agile planning content with them. And so a frequent request is when I'm planning the work, when I'm editing the work and I'm seeing the work, I want to be able to see it across teams, not just at the team level, and across projects. So that's really where delivery plans kind of focus in. The next area down is for source code, and I'm going to do the second one first, which is encryption at rest. I think as soon as this was announced at Build, you and I the next day were talking to customers about it. I mean, it's just that popular. Everybody is concerned about security, as well they should be. If they have source code or other artifacts that they want to that make up their application and they want to move it to the cloud, they have natural concerns about that. So being able to have this encryption at rest really gives another kind of safeguard along the many very rich benefits that Team Services provides around data protection. Another area in source is more support for Git. And let me just throw it over to you for a quick question. What would you say, just from the relationship of Team Services and the many requests we get from customers who are saying that they're moving towards using a Git-style repository, what would you say is the relationship between Team Services and Git?
Yeah, it's a good question, too. So really, we're offering flexibility of choice. So we have customers that look for more of a centralized source control system, which we've had for many years now. It's very mature infrastructure around Team Foundation version control, and that's kind of been our default for a number of years. But in the past several years, we've added in support for Git, for standard Git, that customers, everyone needs choice in what they're working on. And if your team prefers more of that decentralized approach to source management, Git's a great choice for that. And we wanted to make sure that your DevOps process, if you're basing that on Git, gets full of, amazing support in our DevOps process tools. So Team Services, TFS, both support that as just one of the options you can choose out of the box creating a new project and working with the tools that you know on the Git side, so your team doesn't have to retool to use the DevOps solutions that we're talking about here.
Great. Yeah. It's certainly been a frequently requested item, and it's great to see the strong support there. All right, just rounding out real quickly so we can get into some of the detailed slides. You have build and package management, certainly support for NuGet, as you would expect, but great for, you know, for our JavaScript friends and developers, NPM, and then obviously Java support with Maven. And then down on deploy, deployment groups, and actually one of my favorite features, I didn't even know that they were coming out with, but the new designer editor and designer and visualization for doing release and deployment pipelines that Ed Blankenship had showed. So that was, you know, a great item just to kind of get an update on. And boy, I'll tell you, it really goes a long way to not only be able to create the items, but really to be able to visualize them, because part of the challenge that we see with a lot of customers is moving away from tribal knowledge. This one person on our team knows it and knows it really well, but they left the team or they took a different job, and now it's like we have to go relearn, and, you know, God forbid something goes bump in the night and you don't know how the process works. So having that great visualization there really helps out tremendously.
Yeah, one thing I'll add to what you just said, Jim, is I'm not sure if we made that totally clear that with build, packaging, deploying, source, all these different things, we really support you regardless of the technology that you're working with in your application development. So when we mention things like Maven for Java or NPM for Node, that's really part of the overall benefit of using these tools to say, I'm working with Java on this perspective, I'm working with .NET here. That's all, you know, things that we accommodate in these tooling. And you'll see in a moment, I'll talk about the process around that being kind of above the choice of technologies that you're making. So
great.
Go ahead and advance there.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll talk first about the delivery plans feature. And as Jim kind of alluded to, that this gives you cross-team awareness of the things that are in flight. So this is obviously very helpful to us, but now it's available to you too. It's just part of VSTS, of Visual Studio Team Services. It's out there today. It's actually freely available. It's no extra charge. It's part of the basic access level. And the idea, as you can kind of see here in the picture, is that you can have multiple teams that are working each perhaps on their own cadence. They could all be on, some could be on 2-week sprints, others on 3, whatever. This plan will help you to align the fact that certain things are in flight and help you to rationalize when they're going to, if there are dependencies, when they're going to be met, so you can begin development on something else that requires that, when something's going to launch. But across all these things, by the way, this doesn't show you in a screenshot, but these are collapsible. You can change the scale for all of this, so you can see at a macro, micro level and across the different, you know, many teams that you may have, what's happening and what value is being proposed and delivered in a very visual way. So it's a great feature. Hope to try that out. We've got it coming to TFS, your Team Foundation Server on-prem, in Update 2 of 2017. So what that really means is since it's on-prem, we don't control how you install updates to Team Foundation Server. We make available these typically quarterly updates that package up a lot of the innovation that we're putting into the 3-week cadence sprints that we have for the online version. We make that available to you to install at your own pace. And so look to Update 2 to have that for you as well. Okay, so we'll talk now about the deployment groups as well. Again, there's so much we could talk about. It pains me to skip some stuff, but we'll point you to where to get more. But deployment groups really is a great feature, and I would encourage you to take a look at this too. It's currently in public preview. And the idea is pretty straightforward, actually. It's the idea of, hey, I've got all of these different machines out there in my target environment, and some do one thing, others do the other, and some may be part of a pool. They may be elastic. They may, you know, grow and shrink. I may have 3 one time, 10 the next. But I want to have a consistent script, a consistent release definition that I can use that just knows, okay, well, when I'm deploying, I have my web tier, and that needs to go to any machine that has a tag, and that's just part of this process. You can tag these instances as having certain roles or certain identities, and then we can respond to that or we can react to that by saying, well, if the machines have these tags, then we will do the following steps to deploy the application in this way to that part. And you can compose these together. It's a little hard to see in a screenshot here, but I'll encourage you to take a look at it in more detail. You can say,
this part goes to the web, this part goes to the database, this part goes elsewhere to containers and whatnot. But you can compose all that into one view of your release. So you can consistently get that application and all of its different parts out to different places it needs to go with scalability in mind. And what you can't really see there is on the right-hand side at the bottom, you can actually do rolled, kind of phased rollouts as well. So I could say, don't do it all at once. Let's do it, for half of the machines and then the other. All that stuff is baked in here too. So really giving you more options around having multi-environment, multi-technology, multi-phase deployments, all with full audit trails, end-to-end visibility that Team Services and Team Foundation Server offer to you.
Great. Yes, I think we could easily fill an entire day on just the DevOps pieces that were announced.
Oh, yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So great just to kind of hit a couple of the highlights there. So, okay, so the next feature or area that we'll get into is certainly what was my favorite part of the entire Build Conference, and that is the Visual Studio Snapshot debugging for Azure. And I'll go ahead and I'll just intro to the next slide, but I'm going to just give a little bit of a description to this, and that is back at the Connect event in November, in one of the EBCs, I attended Scott Hunter, one of the program managers at Microsoft, was describing, Microsoft's approach around .NET Core and wanting to be very open and supporting all the different platforms and really giving a framework, a rich framework for developers to target any, especially through the use of containers, any both private cloud as well as any public cloud. And as, that talk was going on, a customer chimed in and said, isn't Microsoft a little bit concerned that customers might take .NET, full-blown .NET framework applications, move them to .NET Core, and then run them on a Linux container running in, a non-Microsoft public cloud environment. So, isn't there really a concern that if you're going to be that open that there's, sort of a risk that, Microsoft could sort of be painting themselves into a corner? And it was a great question because I think everybody in the room was kind of thinking about that. And his response to it was, we want to be open and we want to give choice, but we also want to make sure that your experience in both developing and then running or supporting the application is the absolute best on the Azure platform, that it becomes the compelling reason for why you would run it there. And then he quickly went to the whiteboard and then he described what eventually we now know as this snapshot debugging capability, which is, based on App Insights and some capabilities inside of Visual Studio Enterprise, and you're going to go into the details on them. But again, I thought it was very interesting for, as the story is unfolding and customers at large are looking at it and probably thinking similar things in their mind to kind of understand, well, how does it all kind of fit together? Why would Microsoft do something like this? And then when you take a look at something as exciting as the snapshot debugging and really the power that now becomes at your fingertips, because, let's not lose sight of what we're trying to do from a developer's point of view, and that is bring value to market with high code quality, right? Those are really the key concepts. We want to have high code quality so we have a good experience for our customers, and we want to make sure that we're bringing the right value so quickly and frequently, deploying it to market. And this really becomes a great set of features that allow that. So with that little bit of an intro and reflection from the Connect conference, why don't you go ahead and walk folks through exactly what is included in this.
Absolutely, it's a great lead-in. So the point of snapshot debugging with Azure really, as you mentioned, builds on this concept of application insights, which is our unified approach for collecting application telemetry, performance information, kind of utilization details that we can track on your behalf and provide strong degrees of reporting and analytics and really flexibility around understanding how users are actually leveraging your application. And applications of any kind, I should mention, too. So there's a great flexibility in that infrastructure, which Application Insights supports. So we're building on that as well, and we're integrating on the Visual Studio side in with a brand new option in the Azure on the Azure side called snapshot debugging. And what you can do with this is essentially we're talking about production debugging. We're talking about what do I do when I have an application that is not performing as I would expect, or there's some kind of reported issue in production, and I need to figure out what's going on there, but, well, we know what production is. It's hard to set a breakpoint and connect to a production instance because, well, guess what? That application is going to stop running when you hit that breakpoint. Not great for your customers that are out there. So we need a way that's more of like a way to collect details as an application is running. You can almost think about it as like those traffic tubes that you drive over, that you get an intersection, you see those tubes that you drive over. It gives you an idea of where things are going, and we can kind of collect data for you. This is the analogous option here in Azure to say, hey, something's going on in production. Let me have a very minimal impact way of getting details from that running instance, and then leveraging Visual Studio to be able to really pull it apart and show me as a developer the stuff that I need to know to figure out how to make things work or improve performance or just correct an issue in production without taking things down and causing customer impact. That's the essence of what we have here. So this is a minimal impact solution. It supports, obviously, distributed types of applications that are in various places and then components in Azure. But we also recognize that what it can gather could be sensitive information. It's production workloads. So we also secure that by role and are able to lock that down only to the folks that should have the ability to look at that kind of detail. So as with most of everything in Azure, I should say everything in Azure, you have control over who can do what, and this is no exception to that. So let's move ahead. And let's talk about what this actually can do for you and get a little less abstract here. So let's begin with the cloud side of the equation here. And in Azure, in your running application, you can see the application insights details that are being collected for that application. And so you'll see this there. You'll see things like a list of exceptions, for example. And you can click on one of them, and you'll see all the details there. That's just what application insights does. It collects details about what's going on in the application. You really have to do very little to get all this stuff working to begin with. And then you'll start seeing things like, okay, well, at this point we're seeing 50 of these exceptions, 100 of these. Hopefully your numbers are much smaller. Zero would be nice. But if you do have exceptions, you can see them here. You can see the details around them. You can't really see it in a picture here, but you can also see the telemetry around that event. So I can say, well, that exploded there. What happened? What was the user doing right before that? What were they doing after that? And kind of gain an idea of what the scenario was. Now, this builds on exactly that. By adding in a simple collector to your application, it's that thing on the left-hand side, the snapshot collector, you're telling the application that you also want to support snapshots. And that's all you have to do, really. We're going to instrument a little bit of stuff for you on the application. At that point, you're going to send up what we need to do to collect snapshots. In this picture, it's kind of on the right-hand side of that image that's popped up there. You'll see the ability to open that up and to see more of the debugger details around that. And this is getting toward where we are with a snapshot. So if we advance, I'll show you the next view that you'll see there. And that is kind of an itemization of the call stack from that exception. To be able to see, oh, this happened, then that, and this is how I got here. If you click on all of these, this is where the power of snapshots really starts to show up here. I can see what the variables were at that point. I can see the locals in this picture. If you can see that, at the bottom of the screen, you're seeing the locals for that particular part of the process. I can say, oh, well, that should never have been negative, or that should never have been null. Why is that occurring? And now you have a better understanding of how you can go and address the issue. But let's go even deeper, because what you can see on the top right of that picture was a download snapshot button, which will then bring the whole thing down and open it for you in Visual Studio, which if you've installed the extension that we now have for you, the second thing on the left-hand side, you're able to open this up and use all the power of the Visual Studio environment to really get in there and see exactly what's going on there. So in this example, you can see, yep, I can see the lines of code, I can see the actual exception occurring, I know where that occurred, I can see the locals, the call stack, all that kind of stuff, and really get down to brass tacks, figure out exactly what's going wrong, fix it, and then get things corrected in production as soon as possible. So this is really all about helping you to close the gap between production incident and resolution, the mean time to resolution of those issues, because as DevOps, you want to be as unified with what's happening in production as you are in what's happening in development. This is a key feature to help you with that, and it builds on the already very rich set of features in Application Insights to give you even more options around debugging. So let's look at a couple of other views into how you could use this. And the next one here, I should mention the one before that, the actual snapshot debugger, is currently in public preview. So you can go and use that today, go and leverage that preview. The next two things I'll talk about are in private preview, but you can go and request to join that preview. There's a process just to request being joined in, and we'll enable the feature flag for you. And the idea of this next item here is called Snap Points. And it's, I want you to think about breakpoints, but if you think about breakpoints too much, you're going down the wrong path here. You're at a point where you're running an application and something's going on in production. You're trying to figure this out. Things are going wrong. People are angry with you. It's not good. So you want to figure out, oh, I think the problem might be here, but I'm not sure. It's running fine on my machine, but I'm not sure what's going on in the cloud. You can now click on the left-hand side in the far left in the gutter where you would normally set a breakpoint. I can set what's called a snap point. And in that, I can specify, I would like the cloud infrastructure to record what's going on when this line of code is executing in my Azure application. So you think of it as running that tube across the road and collecting data at that point of the traffic and understanding what's happening, who's turning left, who's turning right, what's going on there. I can now see on the right-hand side those snap points being resolved for me. So again, kind of a small picture here, but the right-hand side is a pane that's connected live to that Application Insights collecting of data for us in the production application. And you'll see them flowing in over time. And you can say, oh, what's happening now? Let me open that up and see what's going on.
Now, Chris, you touched on this a little bit earlier, but I want you to just to sort of reiterate this. This is not having an impact on the production running experience?
No, there's really interesting technology behind all this with shadow copying of processes and such. I'll refer you again to the content we'll point you at. Folks like Dan Taylor has a great session on this. They'll go into detail on this and how they've really optimized this to be something that you can actually use in production and not worry about bringing everything down. Like, for example, if I had set a breakpoint here right now and I was connected to my running instance, well, it would work the first time. I would hit the breakpoint and then that application would stop going forward while you're looking at your breakpoint broken in Visual Studio. So obviously not the scenario that you want to use. So I encourage you to look at this. The next thing related to this is the idea of I want to see what's happening in production, but I don't want the whole snapshot to be taken, the whole snap point to be gathered. So what I can do is set up a log point, and that's just a variation on theme of the snap point that I just mentioned. So kind of like you can go into a breakpoint and set up some properties. Now you can go in, open up that snap point, and specify that don't give me the whole thing. Give me just a message. Give me some details about what's going on. So you can customize the fact that you can see different messages occurring as that line of code is being executed. So it's almost like, can you hear me now? In debugging, if you go back far enough, it's like putting in response write lines, right, from trying to figure out what's going on here. But I just want to kind of see where traffic is flowing, what's being executed, but I don't need the whole debugging stack that the SnapPoint and the Snapshot supports. So try that out. That's in private preview as well. You advance one more, I can show you that you can see that both in the portal, which is here, and then also in Visual Studio as well.
Is that the slide you were looking for?
We're all set. So okay. You can go ahead and
all right, great. That.
Yeah, and again, it's very exciting technology. And again, similar situation to the roadmap that was painted back at the Connect conference on .NET and .NET Core, this snapshot debugger, really seeing it come to realization. This slide here we put together, Chris did touch on a number of the different pieces. We've got the links at the end, but it was, the snapshot debugging and profiling in Azure session that Dan and folks did at the build event goes into, I think it's an hour and a half or so of detail of it. The App Map and Profiler, they're generally available today. Those are parts of this overall solution. Public Preview is the automatic snapshots that are collected by App Insights. And then in Private Preview are the Visual Studio Enterprise. So key to point that out, that it's a Visual Studio Enterprise feature only. Snapshots, which is trademarked, and Log Points. Don't know if Log Points is going to be trademarked or not, but I saw it on the slide. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. But they're in Private Preview, as Chris mentioned. You can request permission to get access to them. And at the end of that particular build session, they said that the goal is to have them both in just generally available preview at the time of the summer. And then the very last bullet here that we have, which I think is very interesting, is the roadmap. So they talked about this at the Connect conference, and then it came up again, you know, at Build. So it's great to see that, hey, today this is for a Windows hosted running environment with .NET. But quickly in the backlog is having the .NET, in this case Core, run on non-Windows, in this case Linux, but then also supporting other programming environments, and specifically Node and Java running on Linux. So, you know, great to see that the not too distant future that these are items on that particular backlog. And I think when you see how quickly what we have available today came to fruition from just being discussed and shared back in the fall at the Connect conference, that, you know, it's not too difficult to kind of understand that those features will be there as well. So I know I'm really excited about it, and there's a number of sessions, or excuse me, another number of situations with customers where we're already talking with them about leveraging that. Great, thank you, Chris. All right, so we are sort of winding down, Chris, believe it or not, at the end of our time slot here. So we've come to the rapid fire section, and again, I don't think there's any expectation that we would be able to get through all of these topics, so that's fine. But these are really the ones that we kind of listed out as, you know, some really key top-level messages. I'll ask you a question about one or two of them, but before I do so, just, you know, let me see. Is there any one in particular that just kind of, you know, strikes you as like, yeah, this is one that I think is, you know, was interesting to you or something that you would comment on?
Yeah, it's a tough one to pick from. There's so much that we covered in the keynotes, which I'll encourage folks to watch the keynotes from day one and two, where we talked about a lot of things on the Azure front with, you know, a lot of applause for a cloud shell, being able to just, you know, work with a command line right in the Azure portal and have that already authenticated, have command line tools ready for you to use right there from in the app portal, the Azure portal. Really interesting stuff. The Azure Cosmos DB came out of stuff we were doing internally to support our own global scale application needs around data storage. And so, again, this is worth an entire session as well, of course, but, you know, globally scalable, elastic scale with five consistency models that you can choose from. A lot of interesting, it's multimodal, so you can use it as DocDB, Mongo, as table storage. All those really interesting things are part of that. But I think the day two, interesting stuff around the creators update for Windows 10 and mixed reality, how we're really seeing, you know, the envelope being pushed and seeing customers leveraging what we're working with on Windows.
Yeah, I thought the mixed reality was, you know, it's an easy one to pick because it does have great appeal, but, you know, the blending together of both augmented and virtual reality and harmony in a group of people, not just individual. You know, when I first started reading about some of the HoloLens things and whatnot, it sounded great, but it sounded in a faraway future. And actually seeing, you know, I didn't go to Build, so I didn't participate in the event, but seeing the videos of the people that were and what it was that they were seeing, and, you know, through their devices, and the fact that those devices are available in a developer's kit for you to go ahead and purchase and start building apps on, really goes to show you that this is a lot closer than we might think. And then one other one that I'll comment on, and this is not one that I think, this is not one that I gave a lot of attention to. I don't know if you did either, but because customers had brought it up to us, and then we saw the natural connection to Flow and Logic apps, but the Power Apps community plan.
Yeah.
So, you know, really seeing an investment in taking what probably was the Microsoft Access and other kinds of solutions, and really giving them the ability to just, you know, have an on-ramp to more development. So.
Boy, I wish we had time to talk through a lot of these. We never certainly couldn't do justice to all of them, but we can definitely point you to where to learn more about these as well. So we've got a whole set of resources for you, a lot of announcements, summaries that are available for you. So definitely check all of those out. And finally, we also have a roadshow that's starting right now, actually. That's for, really, if you can get a chance to go or you haven't caught it virtually, it's coming to a bunch of towns, a bunch of cities around the U.S., so definitely check that out as well.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time today, everybody. We hope you enjoyed it, and we look forward to connecting with you on the next topic in the series. Have a good day.
Thank you.